Okay, today's daf is daf chof. We're busily trying to understand how it's possible to say that in a case where you have two people that are coming to claim that the Edim that are Chatumim al Hashtar are somehow or other, they were Psulim, they were Ketanim, they were Anusim, whatever the case would be, that they wouldn't, how is it possible to say that they wouldn't be believed and that we would use, if it was Muxik from somewhere else, we would use the Shtar? So Rav Sheshes tried to say that the reason was because Akhashat Chilat Hazama, there's no way to accept the testimony of the Akhashat because the Edim are no longer present. It's signed on the Shtar, and therefore we have to ignore it. To which Rav Nachman said, look, first of all, basically Rav Nachman mentions two issues. First of all, he says, how could we take something which would be, make a hakasha if these Edim are in front of us? Let's pretend for a moment that the Shtar is so powerful that the Edim are actually standing here, were already made in Bezdin, they were already Nechkar Bezdin, and now these Edim come in and they're Makrish. So we wouldn't pay any attention to them to collect from. How could the Shtar be better than that? And it's even worse in this case, because we have no idea, because they're not here, and because the testimony that we're using is a static testimony, as written in the Shtar, we have no idea whether they would even maintain their testimony in face of the Hakasha. Maybe they would admit it, that it wasn't any good, that they were anus. There's nothing indicative in what it is that they signed, that they weren't anus. So it just makes absolutely no sense as a mathematician to say that when you're telling me that the Shtar is meant to be the way it is, that we'd actually collect with it. That's crazy. Therefore, today, we get up to Elam Reb Nachman. So we're holding now on the top of Chof, and we're down at the seventh line, where Reb Nachman says, Uki Trey Lahadi Trey, V'uki Babona B'cheskes Mori. What we have to do in this case is view it as indeed Edut Mukheshet. When we say that the Shtar is considered to be mukuyami makom acher, that doesn't mean that we collect with it. It means that at least we don't tear it up. In other words, we have a shtar, which if Lamaisa, the other party, would go and would take the money betvisa, and now we would have to be motzi the moment from his rishus, we would say, look, this shtar is neither here nor there under current circumstances. We can't really act upon it one way or the other. Whereas if we would say that they're believed 100%, the second group, to say that it was that they are in fact anusimayu, so then we would proceed on the assumption that the shtar is definitely not true. That's all that it meant. It certainly didn't mean to say that the shtar is usable. And we find exactly this type of circumstances where we don't have an ability to act in court because of the circumstances of whether it's the small print or whether it's the possibilities where we're unable to get to the bottom of it because of that small print, we have a precedent for this. Exactly the same as the famous case of the nechasim of an individual. Now, it could be that this happened a number of times because this story over here of Rav Ashi obviously took place later than the time of Rav Nachman. But it may well be that this is a classic case in which the guy has no name. Barshatya simply means the guy who was a nut. So he was sometimes a nut, and sometimes he wasn't a nut. It basically, it depended on his state. At times he was manic, and other times he was normal. And basically what happened over here is that this Barshatya Zavin Yichsik, and Otu Beitrev Amri Kishu Shote Zavin. So he sold some property, and it was all signed and delivered and everything. The only problem was that two witnesses came and said, look, the sale took place when he was out of his mind. Therefore, he was incompetent. He wants the property back, and he's claiming that he sold it during a period of incompetence. He has witnesses that say that he sold it when he was a shote. But another two witnesses come along and say, that actually he sold it when he was sane. Omer of Ashi, uki trei lahavi trei, v'uki na, the correct gears probably is uki ara. because we're dealing over here with real estate, and that's why we would always go back to an originally known registered owner. So in this case, uki ara b'cheskat bar shatya, keep the property in the chazaka of bar shatya, because since you have to now prove that there was a change of ownership in real estate, and you can't prove that change of ownership, the only given that we have is that the last known owner was in fact bar shatya. So then there's no way to take it out of his rishus unless we have positive proof that he sold it as in a competent state of mind. But this is only, of course, this is only where the chazaka that he himself has on this karka is not given into the same doubt as to his sanity. So in other words, if he inherited this land, okay, so then it's nothing to do with him. If he came into this land only because he himself purchased it, and now we're casting doubts onto his sanity. So, I mean, in the same way that we've got doubts about the sale, we've got doubts about the purchase. There's no reason for us to doubt one more than the other. We now have witnesses that say that this guy is, I mean, you never know what he is. So if let le chazak da'avati, I mean, kishu shote zavan, kishu shote zavin. I mean, we have the same problem about his own assertion of ownership, and therefore we can't say that it's a given to us that it belongs to Bar Shatya, and now you have to change that. Om Rabbi Avu, ein mezimim et ha'edim ela bifneihem. Okay, you said, that according to Rabbi Sheshet, he understood the whole idea over here, it has been dependent on hakchasha tchilat hazama, because of tchilat hazama, we cannot accept a hakchasha unless the edim are present. To which Rav Nachman said, that may very well be true, but we certainly cannot proceed to use the shtar to collect. Comes along now, Rabbi Avu, to say the whole thing is not true. Although it is true that when one attacks the witnesses directly, and not the question of the event, that then clearly the case is that it has to be in front of them because they are now the defendants. Come to say you were liars. I mean, maybe what you said is true, but you were liars in saying it because you weren't there. So there the Baalei Din, who are the Edim, have to be there. But when it comes to Hakhasha, where we're dealing with what happened, that doesn't really involve them directly. And Makrishim et Edim Shelo Bifneihem. When it comes to Hakhasha, it does not have to be in front of them, and we achieve the same Hakhasha. And I'll take it another step. Hazama shelo bifnehem. If they are under attack and they're not present, so you're right, we cannot open a case against them, but we could certainly say that this hazama is at least a hakhasha. Because you're saying that you testified to this, we're saying you didn't testify to this. So therefore, okay, forget about the issue of why you didn't testify. You didn't testify to this because you never saw it. Or you didn't testify to this because it never happened. Right now, that's irrelevant because you're not here for us to make you a defendant. But certainly, as far as the question of whether we accept your testimony, at least a hazama shelo bifneihem is certainly a hakasha. It's a minimal hakasha to cause us to put this testimony in abeyance. Now, the truth is that there is overall a question of what happens in cases of hakasha. And that's a big machlokus in the Gemara. In the case of Akasha, is each set of witnesses saying that the others are liars? Because they're saying, no, that's not what happened. This is what happened. Which means that basically, even in Akasha, you're coming to passel the other Adam. Or do we say that Akasha, each cut of Adam retain their cheskat kashrut, and as long as they're not testifying together, then they're okay. The only problem is, I mean, to take one from one cot and one from the other cot, or, as Tosa says, in this case, Reb Nachman himself holds that the halacha is like Ravuna, who holds that neither cot becomes possible in the case of Hakhasha. So therefore, according to Reb Nachman, why don't we say that since each one can come and be me'ida b'fei atzma, so even though each one is claiming the other one is possible, so why don't we say over here that, look, nobody's saying that he didn't borrow the money. That's not the point. The point was whether they were Ketani. I mean, okay, so we're not in front of these witnesses now. Why can't we just go ahead and actually use the Shem? I mean, it's Rav Nachman's own svara that a Hakrasha does not passel the testimony. I mean, this bothers Tosis very much. So Tosis gives the obvious answer, that where you're talking about a testimony where the other kot has nothing to say about this testimony, that's where he says you have the cheskes kashers. Over here, when what they're saying is that the very testimony that we're talking about over here, they were ketani. Well, when did they have a chazaka that they weren't ketani? I mean, that's not a chazaka from birth. That's a chazaka now. But they're saying then they were ketani. Over there, you can't use a cheskes kashers. And that's one approach. The Rashba says the obvious approach. Rav Nachman said two things. He said, first of all, there'd be the problem of being in front of them. But there's the other question. How about if they would be here, maybe they wouldn't even deny it? There's nothing that they said that indicates that it isn't true. Nobody said they weren't Ketanim. They didn't say they weren't Ketanim. Ask them. I mean, ask them. They're dead. Well, so what am I supposed to do? Maybe they would have said we were Ketanim. So because of that, you don't have the equivalent case of each kot coming to say what it's saying. What you said, we never said otherwise. That's the point. And that's why Rav Nachman Gufa, according to the Rashba's approach, why Rav Nachman Gufa puts in two issues, in which he says, furthermore, maybe if they would be here, they would have themselves agreed that that's what happened. Where did they say otherwise? Okay, so this indeed is a more complex case. So, but if it comes to a general issue, the Edom are not present, and we're makish what they're saying because of Hazoma, that's at least Akasha. Now, Omama, you said that im yesh edim shektav yadam uze, o shaya ktav yadam yotzei mimakom acher, and then you made a point that we hadn't heard before, that it was ktav yadam yotzei mimakom acher dafka from a shtar shekara alav arar, what consists of proof to your signature is that a shtar had already gone through a procedure in which someone had claimed that it was a forgery. The court had examined the shtar, found the witnesses, made certain that it wasn't a forgery, and were mekayim that shtar. There, we accept it. But if we don't have, so then ain't there money. Right? Then we can't believe the people that are coming to now define what it is that they said earlier. So you see from here, says the Gemara, so dafka, that this was the case. Kara alav arar, yes, then it's usable shtar for a kiyum. But lo kara arar, lo. What you're saying is that had it not been attacked legally, you can't use it to prove anything. Now this, in fact, is misayeya leila Rav Asi. This proves Rav Asi's contention. The Yom Ravasi ain't the kamim at ashtar elam ishtar shekara alavar ar v'uchzak b'beiti. This is clearly backing that you cannot prove that a signature is a correct signature unless you have already a shtar that has been put through the ringer. Amri Nardoi. Now, what the Nardoi says is that, according to most Rishonim, not to argue on Ravasi, but to give an alternative. You can be Mekayim Ashtar with a single shtar that's been put through the ringer. How about if you don't have a single shtar that's been put through the ringer? Then what you can do is, in Mekayim et Ashtar, Ela Mishtei Ketuvot, O Mishtei Sadot, V'hu She'achalum Ba'alayem Shalosh Shanim U'Beshofi. If you have two separate shtarot upon which these two witnesses are signed, and each one of them is the type of shtar in which it is clear that there's no problem because somebody bought a field using this shtar. He's been there for many years. Nobody ever said there was a problem. So that means there was no RR on the shtar. But on the other hand, it's pretty clear that there was no basis for an RR. Or a guy is married to a woman, and this is a ksuva. He's been married for 20 years. No, he never claimed we're living together without a ksuva. So we have every reason to believe that despite the fact it hasn't gone through the ringer, there's no indication at all that there's any type of forgery over here. On the contrary, we've been working on a working basis that these are perfectly good shtarot. So then, Ubishofi, nobody's claimed anything over the past 3 years, where they already got a chazaka that began with this now mecher, shtar mecher, that these witnesses were signed on. So now we can compare the signatures to this and come out with a kiyum. Omrib Shimi Barashi, but let me just, there's one caveat to that. It's only biyotze mitachat yad acher. If the guy himself who is trying to prove that this shtar is not a forgery is the one to present to the court the other shtarot which he claims clearly are not forgeries because they've been here for many years, it's true that those other shtarot are not forgeries. But the fact that he was the guy who presented it means that they were under his control, and therefore he had ample time to use the signatures and to forge the new shtar. So therefore, we can't trust any shtarot that come once the guy who had this shtar had access to them, because then he could have used it to forge. And he's sitting there studying very carefully the signature, and he simply forges the signature. So avomiyad atzmola, if he had it under his own hand, forget it. What's the difference, really? I mean, ma'ishna tachat yad atzmo dolo. Why are you saying that if he had it? Because Dilma is a euphemism. I mean, because that gave him an opportunity to forge it. So what are you trying to tell me? That if it belonged, if it came from somebody else, well, he never saw it? Maybe his friend had the ksuvah up on the wall or something, right? So he went into the house and then he saw the ksuvah. Okay. Then he goes back home, forges now the signature of the witnesses that was on the ksuvah. Then he comes to court and he says, I mean, there were other shtarot that the signature signs. As a matter of fact, I think my friend actually has a shtarot. So then they ask the friend, bring your ksuvah. Oh, yeah, you're right, the same thing. So what are we, naive? So what kind of business is that? Maybe he was in the other guy's house. He saw the signature of the witnesses, and then he went home out of his ayah. No, because we don't give a cursory examination of signatures. Nobody is that much of an expert that he could have looked at the thing. I don't care how long he stood staring at the thing, then go home and be able to do a convincing ziyuf of what he saw. If he has it right next to him, who knows, he could have one of those pens where he goes. I mean, he could have done a perfect job, but if it's not right next to him, he couldn't have done a perfect job. What's more, it's very interesting, Tosfos uses the normal distinction that we make between Tviyut Ayin and Siman to talk about the graphology as well. And what he says, thank you very much, what he says is like this. Usually, as the Gemara proves elsewhere, the fact that you know something and that your brain identifies something is not based on any particular detail. It's based on a holistic perception of the brain, which is called Tviyut Ayin. The proof of the pudding, says the Gemara, is that if you send your friend in to call somebody out from shul, and he knows that person, he'll go into the Beit HaKnesset, find the person, and call him out from shul. But if you identify a person, you say, look, find me the guy with a mole on the side of his nose that has white hair on the right temple, whatever.
Incarnation.
Maybe he'll find him, maybe he won't find him, but there's certainly no comparison of a set of data points to actually Tviyut Ayin. So Simanim, that could be indeed, the Torah doesn't rely on Simanim maybe, but Tviyut Ayin is what life is all about. This is what I know to be, that's all. If I tried to tell you how I know it to be, I couldn't even begin to tell you. If I needed to describe you, I'd be at a loss. But there's no question in my mind that I recognize you 100%.
Is that like the Ampuria in Baal Metziah, where the Ampuria, you see long enough, you identify it?
Yes, that's the assignment, exactly. So therefore, so the same thing is true about a signature. There is an element of Tvias Ayin on a signature. If somebody identifies a signature, that's much better than our having to compare signatures. If we need to compare signatures, so then we don't have that holistic vision. We're looking at a set of points. We're trying to get basically a computerized analysis based on the specific curves and so on and so forth. That's not as good as Tviyas Ayin. So because of that, we're limited to being worried about ziyuf. So there the guy could imitate that set. But you can't imitate the real thing. So even if it would be next to him, if there's a tviut ayin, there's no chashash of ziyuv. Tremendous tiddush. Because the people would be able to see right away what the difference is. Even though we can't explain the difference, we know that the difference is there. Amazing thing. I mean, this has tremendous implications of it in terms of a lot of even commercial issues in which expertise, where it has to stand up in court, the question whether the expert's able to explain how the heck he knows that such a thing is true is a big problem, because 90% of the time he has no idea how he knows it's true. He can give you some kind of explanation, but it's something that anybody else could duplicate. And yet the whole point of his expertise is, I know. That's all there is to it. I know. Yeah, but it's just, there's so many things. I have no idea how I know. Some fantastic cases in that book, you had Blink book. Absolutely astounding cases. One case where Metropolitan Museum spent millions and millions of dollars on an ancient Greek statue, which they had everybody examine and test the spectroscopic analysis, this, that, and so on. Everybody's moda pe echad. This is 100%. Die to spend your money, and so on and so forth. So then the curator says, as like a friend, as like a big bookie in these things, which they didn't call him in. He wasn't there at the time. So he wants to show him. So the guy walks in, you know. He says, "Did you already pay for this?" So the guy turns white.
And learned the doc from.
I just what's wrong? You know, he says it's like a joke. It's a total forgery. So how do you know? So the way that he knows is, if he's in the presence of a forgery, his stomach starts getting sick. And there's no suffix. It's 100% a forgery. So they went back, and they found out it was a forgery and how it was done. And this is like all the time. He says, "I have no idea how I know. My stomach immediately curls up. I feel like I'm in the presence of, I want to vomit. I want to vomit." Dozens and dozens of such cases. Dozens says that's true about signatures too. You can't say how, this is not this guy's signature. What do you mean? It looks exactly the same. The computer. Please, it's a joke. Tell us. I can't tell you, but it's not his signature. So when it comes to that level of ziyuv, certainly it couldn't be Messiah even if it was right next door. Tanur Rabban, Kotev Adam Edutor Al Ashtar Umeid Aleha Afilu Le'Acher Kama Shanim. This is interesting. A person has a right to write down something that he saw so that he should be able to remember what he saw, and then go testify in case it'll be nogea years later, and he's worried he's going to forget. Now, that's Rashi's pshat. There are others. There's actually a pshat by Reb Sadia Gaon. That's true, but that there's a different issue here, and that is kotev adam edutol ashtar. It's two things. Kotev adam edutol ashtar A umeid alea B afilu yachar kama shanim. In other words, if you saw something, and only 20 years later, they ask you, "Please, could you write this out in a shtar? We're afraid that you're not going to be around much longer, and we'd like to be able to prove this." You can write a shtar and sign it based on what it is that you saw. That's A. And furthermore, you could have written it on a piece of paper and be made to the fact that you saw it, despite you're reading it on a piece of paper. Now, of course, the pashtus of the problem that is involved here is that the Torah says mipihem. From there we darshan mipihem velo mipiktavam. Not what they wrote, but rather what they say. So is this not a problem that they themselves are reading what they wrote down, and now they're not really being made what they know? Explains Rav Huna, obviously that's not the case. I'm Rav Huna v'gush zochra miatzmo. The point over here is without looking at the shtar. He remembers what he wants over here is just to refresh his memory of some of the details, and then reading it, of course, he then remembers the whole thing. But it's not that he's suggesting things to himself. That's Rav Huna. Rabbi Yochanan says, you know what? Even if you didn't remember a darn thing, But when you read it, you remembered. And you're certain that it's not suggestion. That's also good, because what you're being made is from your own mind, not from the paper. Rabbi Yochanan Amar Afa Pisha In Zochra Miatzma. Omar Rabba. So Rabba points out that Shmanina Amir Rabbi Yochanan. We see now, based on what Rabbi Yochanan says, it's actually brought as Rabba, not Rabba, La Halacha, that Hani betrayed the Yadi Sahadutin. If there were two witnesses who had been witnesses together. Jonathan, you okay there? Jonathan, are you all right?
It's like a mint. I'm about to say.
Make pretend it's the emergency room.
Injection.
So at least we have some of Joburg here. So far he's not doing a good job representing you, but he's getting up. So we see from here, says Rava, that if you've got two witnesses who saw something together, one of them forgets the details, the other one who does remember can remind him, and then it's, right. How about the guy himself about whom the testimony is? He says, hey, don't you remember? Oh, yeah, I do remember something.
About leading the witness.
Yes, exactly. What's the difference over there? Rav Chaviva says, Afilo Atzmo. Mar Breda Rav Asher Mar Atzmo Lo. Now, come on. I mean, there is too much suggestion over here. If he's the guy himself, the Baal Din cannot be the one that's going to be masked. But the halacha is that although Atzmo Lo, he is not believed, but Yitzur B'mirabonan Hu, if the witness is a Talmud Chacham who can clearly distinguish between something that he's being led onto, or something that he really now was reminded of, and the whole memory comes flooding back. So then I feel like smoke, because there's no chashash over here that a Talmud Chacham is going to rely on a suffix. I think I remember, and well, you know, I like the guy, so maybe I should remember. That we don't have any chashash on, and therefore we don't view it as leading a witness.
Once you get a little
single,
you remember the whole set.
That's not going to be a single. And there's a case, famous case, where Rav Ashi knew a certain event had happened. He was a witness to something that Rav Kahana needed, or somebody owed Rav Kahana money. So Omar Le, Rav Kahana came to him and said, Midachar, Mahai Saaduta, do you remember like the event where so-and-so? Nope, and don't remember anything about it. You don't remember anything about it. What do you mean? You don't remember? We were sitting over there right in front of the supermarket. The guy came over. He needed $100. I came up. No, you don't. I don't have to say. I'm really sorry, but I don't remember. L'sof itka Rav Ashi. In the end, Rav Ashi remembered, and he came into court the next day, and asked like, and he comes to be made on the case. So he sees Rav Kahana's looking at him, maybe not, or it was Mechasim. He said, what, he thought maybe Rav Ashi was like being led on by him? Omar Leis, Rav Ashi said, what are you, crazy? Me sabret alachka samichma? I would walk into court relying on something you told me? I sat there trying to reconstruct that whole day, and I came to remember the thing so that I could be made for you. Tzanhat. Now, there's a mission in Ahalot that says that in the cases of chashash, and the reason that we're bringing this in here is because we'd like to know whether there are limits to reliable memory. Are there time limits to reliable memory? So it says over there in Ahalot that if you have tluliyot akrovot, bein layiru, bein laderach, so now you've got these little furrows that are like little hills that afford a bit of protection off of the side of the road or to the side of a city. And it is possible that someone may have buried a nafel there and so on, not wanting to go out alone at night. But it's close enough to the road that they're not afraid to go out there. So if it's close, and we're going to define what close means, whether it's close to the city or whether it's close to a highway, and whether they are chadashot or whether they are yeshanot. Now, if they're chadashot, and that means something would have been recent. That means it couldn't have happened more than 10 years ago, because the hill really only was part of the landworks over the past 10 years. So somebody would know about it, or whether they're old and no one would know about it. Nonetheless, we have to worry about there being tumeot, because it's possible someone went out there in private and buried an eifa. Arachokot, on the other hand, if they are far away, so that a woman would not go out there alone, so there were other people that would have gone with her, so then if they are chadashot and nobody knows about it, so then they're torah. If they're yishanot, and then perhaps it was forgotten, so then they're tumeot. Now, obviously, this is going to raise the question of whether memory extends, however we define yishanot. Memory seems to extend lahalacha only to a particular point. I mean, we know what that point is, but there's something that's called miyushan, which in modern terms would be a statute of limitations of some kind. And that's what this would be saying, that there are limitations on how long we expect people to remember things, which would imply that if they claim to remember them, perhaps we wouldn't accept it. And indeed, civil law takes this into consideration in statute of limitations. You can't bring up a case in which people no longer really remember clearly what happened. Now, we go to define over there, what does that mean? It's Zohi Krovot. What do we mean when we say they are close enough to the road that she wouldn't be Choshesh? Chamishim Amma, within 50 Amot. And what is considered to be old? It's more than 60 years. So in other words, if these things have been around now for 60 years, so then it may well be that beyond 60 years ago, indeed there were people who had gone out there with her, knew that there was a tumah there, but look, it's so long ago, it's no longer remarked upon. So says Rabbi Meir, so that we seem to have over here an objective definition of what's considered to be so old that there would be no problem. I mean, there would be a problem because there would be no one who would be able to tell us that something had happened there, and therefore we have to be chayish. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, you can't give a rule to this. Krova simply means it's the closest hill to the road. That's all that it means. So krova means she'in krova himena. If there's a closer one to get, even if this they're both betoch hamishim ama, why in the world would she go to the further one? So the point over here is that as soon as she's hidden from sight of the road or from the city, she would go and be koveret something there. Nishana is also simply means she'ina adam zochra. Nobody can tell you, I remember that there was a time that there was no hill over there. As far as anybody remembers, that's the way things always were. That's what yishanot means. But there's certainly no particular statute of limitations of memory. Now, by the way, you said bein le'ir, bein le'derech. Don't quite understand. When you say ear or derech, what do you mean? My ear or my derech? If you mean an ear means an ear mamash. In other words, that's really a city. And a derech means a highway. So how in the world, just because something is close to a city, anywhere close to a city, anywhere close to a highway, so you're going to tell me that we're going to be machzik tumah there? Because what? Because maybe something once happened somewhere in the past century. What kind of crazy thing is that? We know that unless we have very serious reason to think that a particular event happened, we don't just stop, come along and say, well, you never know, and end up being metame portions of Eretz Yisrael. We don't do that because Amrish Lakish Ilam Matzu, the Tiaru Eretz Yisrael, that we look for any type of excuse, even where there was a basis to say that there was Tumat HaTaom in a particular place. And we look for an excuse, and we say, no, there's no problem of tuma. Or the Rabbeinu Chananel's pshat, ila is the targum of tzela. So in other words, what we do is we are semech that tuma is in a particular area, not in other areas, in order to be metayer Eretz Yisrael. If you have any indication, well, here's where the tuma was, and don't worry about it being somewhere else. Okay, but the point is, we certainly are not going to be mazik tuma in Eretz Yisrael because maybe something happens. It can't mean any city. Omer Bizera, what it means is ear, that you're right, you're near the Beit HaKvarot. Or the road means it's the derech to the Beit HaKvarot. And the logic is, I mean, I understand, derech Beit HaKvarot, I understand. That the issue is that it could be that they were going out to a Levaya, it was right before Shabbos. So they're running out to the Levaya, and they see that there's no time to bury the mace and get back for Shabbos. So what might have happened, that Misrami Bein Ashmoshes Umakru Vekovru Betel, they went off of the road and figured, look, nobody walks by here anyway. What's the chance that somebody's going to be carrying to Truma here or whatever? So over there, I understand that it was on the way to the Beit HaKvarot, so perhaps they buried a mace on the way. But I don't understand. If it's a city that's Smucha le Beit HaKvarot, so then people would bury the mace in the Beit HaKvarot. It's the opposite logic. I mean, so you're telling me it's a city that's near the Beit HaKvarot? No, so then go to the Beit HaKvarot and bury your dead. So then kuli le Beit HaKvarot asle. Omar Rabbi Chanina, the point is that mitoch she'anashim kovrot sham neflehem umukeshchin zro'otehem, since you have people that are embarrassed, a woman who miscarries, she doesn't want it mefursam that she has to bury perhaps a viable fetus after a certain point where the fetus is metame, so she goes out and she buries it on her own. Or you have people that are mukeshchin who lose their limbs, and a limb from a living body is metame. So they're also very embarrassed. So they now will bury their limbs. So at 50 amma azli lechuda. So up until 50 amot where we have to be chayish, so fine, we're chayish. Tvei, but if it's more than that, then she would have taken somebody with her. Ula Beit HaKvarot azla. And then they would have walked to the Beit HaKvarot. So therefore, Yilkach Tuma Be'eretz Yisrael Lo Machzikina. In a case where it's Korev to the city that's even by the Beit HaKvarot, so if it's close, so then you have a chashash. But if it's not close, then they would have definitely gone to Beit HaKvarot, and there's no chashash. Omer Rav Chisda, and here's the only reason we're bringing this up in our sukkah, says Rav Chisda, if Rabbi Meir gave a time limit to testimony, so Shema Minami Rabbi Meir, that Hai Sahaduta Ad Shitik Shnin Mitker Tvelo Mitker. Here we're talking about the way in which a person is able to reconstruct his memory reliably from indications that he put on a note. I assume that's what you mean by Tvias Ayin type of idea, Scott, right? But what he has to see is the thing, right, similar to Tvias Ayin. That doesn't literally mean Tvias Ayin. So, and we're relying on that. Ah, but Rabbi Meir seems to be giving a time limit to that. And he's saying, your brain will not reconstruct a scene when it's past 60 years from the scene. That's what Rabbi Meir seemed to be saying. Which has enormous implications, Ladina. That Tvei Mishitin Shnin Lo Mitkar, says the Gemara of Elohi. There's absolutely no reason for us to come to such a conclusion. All that we were saying over here was that when you're trying to find out about an insignificant at the time event to someone who did not think he was going to be called upon in court, and you're asking him, and it took place more than 60 years ago, over there we don't expect. The brain clears itself out every 60 years to make room for new material, you know? But if a guy is a witness, I understand, what's the difference how long ago he witnessed it? That's something that he wanted and intended to be put into permanent memory. And if he's telling you he remembers it perfectly well. Blah, blah, blah. And if it's for 120 years, what's the difference? So over there it's because the Lo Ranya lay. There was nothing on him that made him say, this is something I must remember. Avalach, when he was called upon to witness something, Kivan de Ramiale, since it's now put upon his shoulders to take responsibility for it, Afilu tu vanami, obviously, more than 60 years, nothing magical about 60 years is an impact on memory, and therefore he could remember it forever.
What you told us about spot ties in with that yesterday.
That's right, there you go. Indeed, it's like yesterday. Remember better the earlier things. That's right. That's true. That's true.
When people start to lose it, they fade back to a time that's
earlier. Yeah, that's what it is. All right, gentlemen. We'll see you, Bezrat Hashem, tomorrow at 9:30, assuming that we get through all of this in peace and Chaim with Shalom and a Gemara Chasima Teva.